chineses.
You're listening to Potty Mouth Radio, the home of movies, music, television, and comedy.
Warning, the following podcast contains coarse language and spoilers for the film and the title of the podcast.
Now playing.
Leave this in the podcast, Billy. I'm going to be the grumpiest motherfucker.
Movie reviews in 20 Qs.
Hello, you goddamn fantastic people, and welcome to the podcast, Movie Reviews in 20 Qs, the show where we review a movie by asking 20 questions about it. I am your host, Sam, and I am joined this week by a guy that's been on way too many times, if you ask most people. It's Billy! Billy from Welsh Thing. How are you, Billy?
Mate, I'm great. I've been on so many times. This has got to be, oh, mate, 10? I reckon the first time I was on must have been a good 5 years ago now when we did, I think Eternal Sunshine was my first one.
It was, which was like well into the 30s or 40s in terms of episode numbers. So it was over 200-something episodes ago. Fucking phenomenal.
You know what, though? It's always a joy to be here with you, my friend. Always. And now I get to listen to your beautiful voice every fortnight, whether I'm on or not.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you can do a bit more of a promo for that at the end. The other half of We Watch the Thing is joining us this week as well for his first time on the show, Dave. How the fuck are you, Dave?
I'm fucking great, my friend. How are you?
Oh, let's not talk about
Billy
me.
Billy didn't ask because Billy doesn't give a fuck.
Because I'm a cunt.
Oh, who does, really? I'm representing Muchu's catchphrase this week by saying I'm incredibly hungover and I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. But I'm here. Hey, if you guys wanted full Grumpy Sam, here it is. This is going to be fucking miserable. But the movie that we're talking about isn't that miserable. It's Fall Guy, stars Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt, literally just come out. And Hannah Waddingham, as most people will know from Ted Lasso. And Aaron Taylor Johnson.
And Game of Thrones. Shame.
Yes. And the Shame Lady. How could I forget? Has a score of 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 87% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 77% on Metacritic. And whoever's seen it the most recently has to give a plot. And that's Dave, because he watched it fucking 45 minutes ago. Go, David Powell.
Retreading 70s and 80s TV, as is most people's want these days, Colt Seavers is a semi-retired stunt person who is called back into action when his ex-girlfriend, and who's now helming her first directorial debut, her film comes asunder, and he's called back into action to track down the missing star of that film who has fallen off the radar and finds himself in all sorts of crazy and predictable turmoil.
Do you know what the funniest part is? I went to work after watching this, and I was saying to a lady at work that, you know, I think has a very similar taste in movies as me. And I said, I went to watch this movie last night. It's like an action comedy. And she's like, what's it about? And I was like, well, it starts off with this guy breaking his back, right? And then this girl that he's in love with tries to be there for him, but he just pushes her away and doesn't want anything to do with her. Anything to do with him. And then anyway, he's like, he's miserable and he's working at this Mexican restaurant. And she was like, it's a comedy. And I was like, yeah, that'll happen in the first 2 minutes. Okay, so it
gets a lot less depressing.
It's a lot. So he gets sent out to Australia to, you know, because he thinks he's going out there to meet up with her, but she doesn't actually know he's coming, and she's like, this is a comedy? I'm like, yeah, no. 2 steps away from being a fucking tragedy, this movie. Yeah. Anyway, if you haven't heard this podcast before, what we do is we review a movie by asking 20 weird and wonderful questions about it. Start with 10 that can be applied to any film. Then move through 3 personal questions that we thought of while we were watching this movie. The one we always start with, compliment sandwich. One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing good if we liked it. Or one thing bad, and one thing good, and one thing bad if we didn't like it. Or unless we want to give it the hyperbole sandwich, which is, of course, one thing good, one thing great, and one thing good. Billy, we'll go alphabetically. Right. Why don't you lead us off?
All right, let's do it. My first good thing, I'm pretty sure that we're all going to have the same things. I'm just going to be stealing
all your
guys' shit.
These are
going to
be very similar, I think.
My first good thing is the cast and the chemistry, honestly.
Ding, ding, ding.
Rygos fucking crushes it. This is my favorite Rygos performance. This is my favorite Emily Blunt performance, which might shock some people. I'm actually not generally a huge Emily Blunt fan. I think
You've seen Devil Wears Prada, right?
I haven't.
Of course you haven't. You're too busy watching
Sicario?
Fucking Friends.
Sicario. Yeah.
I could list off her filmography,
yes, she's
Sam.
She's excellent in Sicario. She's excellent in Quiet Place. There's lots of stuff she's good in. I think I just find her a
that
bit
Billy hasn't watched.
Hard generally.
Yeah. Into the Woods, Billy hasn't watched.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, I think she's great in this, and I think that the two of them have a wonderful chemistry together.
This is the first time you've seen her in a film, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. I think it's the first time I've seen her in a romantic lead, in a romantic comedy.
In a rom-com.
Mostly she tends to do dramatic roles, and she's great in those. So I was really shocked at how good her and Ryan Gosling's chemistry is in this. I thought that they really worked well together. Yeah. My next good thing is that I was actually surprised. I personally feel like the humor really lands in this film, which again I wasn't expecting. I didn't have really high hopes coming into this, and I was surprised at how much I enjoyed it and just how much I laughed. And I mean, we'll get into it later, but I think part of that is because, and I say this lots, Sam, I don't think they make movies like this anymore. This took me right back to
it
like...
It definitely feels like a movie from the 80s.
Well, it does, to me, it felt like, yeah, like an action comedy of, yeah, the 80s or 90s that we just don't get a lot of. So I was fully on board. Honestly, I really, really struggled to come up with a bad thing, but I knew I had to because it's not a hyperbole sandwich. I didn't love it that much. So I'm just going to say I think it's a little long. I think a little bit of an edit could have helped this movie along a bit because as much as I enjoyed it, I think towards the middle act, it does start to drag a bit. So there you go. All in all, I'm going to give this a, 8,324.
That's a pretty good score. Yeah. What do you, David?
All right. First good thing, the stunts. Obviously, yes. David Leitch is the next stunt guy. The stunts are phenomenal, as they are in every single one of his films, even god-awful shit like Hobbs and Shaw. Leitch knows how to do an action scene and is one of the best in the business. So there are some set pieces in this that are just a joy to watch. Bad thing, the plot.
Oh,
it's predictable.
No.
It's fucking ridiculous. That you know every single beat from about 3 seconds in.
Yeah,
there are no surprises.
I don't think that makes it a bad thing.
I know. Oh, it's trying to be an 80s, 90s film where that was kind of how they all were. No, I just think it's not particularly well written. But my second good thing, because I did like this. I did have a good time with this. As you said, the chemistry between... the character Hannah Waddington's great, but I mean, this is Ry Goz and Emily Blunt, and we knew their chemistry was great because of all of their banter around the whole Barbenheimer thing. Every time they appeared together, they were riffing off each other beautifully, and it's just all through this film. Every time they're together on screen, I've had a smile on my face. So yeah, that's my sandwich.
Yep, out of 10,000,
6,500.
Oh,
wow.
That's low.
That is quite low.
I recommend. It's above average.
Yeah, that is true. I was with you on the plot. There was a point there where I remember thinking, God, if they make it that she's, Hannah Waddington's behind it or whatever, if she's behind this and he's actually a piece of shit, that would be so predictable, but surely they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And then... But even the movie was just like, oh, I don't know how to write the third act. And I was like, don't. Please don't paint yourself into that. By acknowledging that we've kind of got a weak third act, aren't we then making it an awesome third act? I was like, no, you're not.
No. It's not meta enough to carry that off.
No, it's not. But, I mean, that being said, I love the fuck out of this movie. I had a really good time. So much so that I got drunk over the weekend. I don't remember jack shit about it. When I was answering my questions tonight, I was like... Shit, wasn't fucking M'Baku in this movie? Winston Duke? How am I going to put him into this?
And M'Baku was all over this.
Yeah. I have not mentioned him in a single one of my answers.
No, neither. And I was like, but then I was trying to think of other characters, and then I was thinking of like, there's three things that stuck with me, and none of those things can possibly go into any of my answers. So that's interesting. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys. Like the cast, the stunts, they were amazing. My only bad thing, similar to what you're saying, Billy. The waterboat scene, which then transitioned into the final set piece, all that sort of scene, those two go for way longer than they should.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's almost like this movie was. It's like Leach was sitting around with some stunt buddies getting drunk and going, you know what? We don't have an Oscar. We're really fucking underappreciated. I need to make a movie that celebrates our industry. Hey, you remember that fucking TV show that made us all become stunt people in the first place from back when we were kids? I'm going to make a movie of that cunt.
Yeah. And that's why I loved this movie so much. I reckon you can you can feel the passion. Like this is
100%.
This is a movie made by people who love movies and love stunts.
I could have done with more scenes on set and less scenes of the actual plot. Give me more of the movie within a movie stunt shit.
Yeah,
and less of the rom com.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm more closer to Billy than Dave. I'm probably 7,892.
Nice.
Anywho, that moves us over to question number two. What is it, Billy?
All right. Question number two is, at what point should the movie have turned into a musical?
As soon as the Kiss song started playing at the outset, I wanted this whole film to be a musical.
You would.
Fuck that.
I think that would have made it quantum leaps better.
Nah. The correct answer is when he takes all the drugs and he starts seeing unicorns.
Yeah, I can see that too.
That'd be good. Yep.
I wanted a musical scene where he's
coming in with White Rabbit or something from Jefferson Airplane.
Yeah, White Rabbit, something like that. Some very druggy sort of song, you know.
Yeah.
And it would kind of riff on the fact that he did his little song and dance in Barbie. We could just have this low tempered, just, you know.
I am cult enough.
Yeah. You know, it would be great if you had like this whole big song and dance number, like I'm Ken or something. But then it cuts to him and he's actually just in an alley screaming like, because he's high off his tits. That'd be great.
Did you guys that expect that fight scene? Because he's doing this fight scene where he's seeing the sparkles and everything. And he is kicking ass and taking names and looking amazing. Did you guys expect it to get to the end of the fight scene and then see it not from his point
that
of view?
That would have been
and
great.
He's just flailing around on the floor.
I would have enjoyed
the
that.
Shit kicked out of himself.
100%.
The whole thing's been a trip.
Yeah.
100%. I wanted like, every guy's just sitting there. He thinks he's knocked them down, but they haven't actually gotten out of
their
seats
yet. And they're all just
yet.
Standing there looking at him. He's on his back on the floor like a beetle, just going, ah!
Yeah. And we see he's punched himself twice in the face, and he's trying to fight himself off. Like, that's what I wanted. That's what I wanted. Yeah. Sure.
Ironically, as much as I was shitting on Dave, my answer's pretty much the same. I would have, like, as soon as he woke up from his accident... you know, people are just singing like that Scrubs episode and he's just completely off his shit. And that's why he becomes a shut-in, because he just can't stand hearing people sing all the damn time.
Oh, that's fucking dark. This is your Eternal Sunshine love coming out.
Christ, that wouldn't that
I thought you were going to say, it Wizard of Oz style, he comes out of his accident, out of the hospital, and it's the whole thing's a musical until the end, and he gets like donked on the head and then wakes up and the musical's over and he's back to normal.
And he's finally happy again.
Rather than, from what you just said, he has an accident, breaks his back, goes into a coma briefly, wakes up and then is insane for the rest of the film.
Yeah. Or just in traction. That's his entire life. He's just in traction, broken spine, can't do
his
anything.
His entire life is a dream from that point, and he's paralyzed from the neck down.
Shout out to the Nick Haskins question of how could this movie ending be changed to be a fucking tragedy. There we go. Yeah. Billy's nailed it. Anywho, question three. What have we got, Dave?
What movie would you pair this with as a double feature?
I just want another fun action movie. I'm going to go with The Raid. Well, the reason why I'm saying The Raid is I'm warning people out there, hardcore listeners, to go and watch The Raid, Indonesian movie from 2011, because we're going to do an episode on it. I don't give a fuck if no one else watches it. I will do an episode on it by myself. I fucking love that movie. I want to make sure that the fucking every movie that I ever wanted to talk about on this podcast is getting done. People go watch The Raid. I love The Raid.
Yep.
I'm watching it tonight.
Nice. My answer could not be more different. I've gone with another 70s TV show adaptation that is a silly action comedy, and I've gone Charlie's Angels.
Thank God. I was waiting for fucking, what was that horrible movie with what's his face? Chips. That's one.
Chips. Oh, no. God, no. But this movie,
so
when I said they don't make movies
the
like this.
TV show or one of those McGee pieces of
shit? Yeah, the first McGee one. Yeah, Drew Barrymore, Lucy Liu. Yeah. When I said they don't make movies like this anymore, that's the exact movie I was thinking of. This is miles better than that. But they don't make silly action comedies anymore. So, yeah, I thought that that would be a perfect double feature.
One might say that the world has matured beyond them, but sure. All right, my double feature's fairly predictable if you know the film, I guess. There's a Richard Rush film from 1980 called The Stuntman, which is about a guy who's on the run from the law, stumbles onto a movie set and becomes the replacement stunt guy. So it's another movie within a movie. It's an action comedy. You've got Peter O'Toole just chewing the scenery as the director of the film, and it's a fucking great movie. So, yeah, two cut from the same cloth to a point.
This really is the yin and yang of the podcast, and that we've got one like awesome answer and one like, what are you doing, bro?
I know. I don't know what Dave was thinking with that answer. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, neither. What the hell, Dave? You could have at least gone with Charlie's Angels, you know, the Elizabeth Banks one that came out that nobody watched.
I could have gone the second Charlie's Angels.
Full Throttle.
Times two.
Yeah.
Now that is a bad movie.
That's terrible, terrible movie.
Yes, as opposed to all the other
anyway, it moves us over to question number four. I forgot to say that last question was courtesy of our lovely patron Emily Higgins. Thank you so much,
Emily. Oh, we love Em.
Yeah. We sure do.
Go check out her podcast, Tasteless. There'll be a link in the show notes. Question four: what flavor pizza is this movie?
This was the easiest question of the whole lot. It's thin crust pepperoni. Easy. It's the kind of pizza that you look at it in the box and you're
fucking
like,
not.
Well, that is just greasy and cheap and crap. But then you eat it and there is no tastier pizza than just a thin crust pepperoni pizza. Like, it looks shit. It feels cheap. It's so full of grease, but it's just delicious and yum. That's how I found this movie.
Thin crust pepperoni is if you're talking like Pizza Hut, obviously, flawless culinary accomplishment. So you're saying this is a perfect film?
I'm saying it's pretty close. It's the kind of pizza that looks greasy and gross. You don't expect it to be perfect. You bite into it and you're like, this is real good shit.
No.
It's a good answer. What do you got, Dave?
Ham and pineapple. Most of it's really enjoyable, but there's some fucking gross bits that just shouldn't be there. Oh, and every bite you're going, really?
Now you're slamming off pineapple.
If only that one thing wasn't there.
Your opinions are so fucked tonight, Dave. Pineapple on a pizza really works, man. You have no clue what you're talking about.
I can't believe I'm with Billy on this.
Not even Hawaiians like Hawaiian pizza.
Can't believe I'm with Billy on this. I actually enjoy Hawaiian pizza.
Yeah, bro.
Weirdly, I'll have a ham steak with a bit of pineapple on it, but on a pizza, it's the melted cheese. Cheese and pineapple doesn't go together. It's not the ham and pineapple. It's fucking molten cheese and pineapple, and that's just a fucking devil's combination.
You know what doesn't go together? An Aussie pizza. It consists of kangaroo, crocodile, emu. It's bloody as hell, and it makes fuckable sense, but that's kind of what this pizza is. That's what this movie is to me. It's set in Australia. It makes fuckable sense. It's, you know, you just go along with it. Just go along for the ride. And I'm there. And, like, I don't know if any of those three animals taste delicious. These guys have them for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Maybe they can inform me. But fuck it. Why not? Have you guys eaten an emu?
I've had emu burger.
Oh, there we go.
Emu burger was pretty fucking good.
What about a wallaby?
Wallaby would be much like... I haven't, but I would imagine it's much like kangaroo, but maybe a little less gamey. Kangaroo, I find, is a little too gamey.
I don't mind kangaroo. Kangaroo's
like
okay.
Game.
It's cooked well.
Most times I've had kangaroo, other than a couple of full restaurant experiences, I've found it...
Most people just don't know how to cook
too
it.
Too gamey.
Yeah.
I haven't cooked it myself. I've had it... I mean, I have. When I cooked it myself, it was quite good. When I've had it out... Most times I've gone, I'd rather just have fucking beef or something.
So there you go, rest of the world. If you're wondering if Australians eat roadkill, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course we do.
They love the shit.
Right.
Echidna grill.
Question number five. What quote from this film would be the worst to hear immediately after having sex?
Are you crying at listening to Taylor Swift?
God damn it, that was my one too. Fuck it.
I didn't realize that would be weird because that's what my wife always says to me after sex. well, I went with a different one.
You and your errors tour.
I went with a different one. Mine is, I had no choice. I had to do some Jason Bourne shit.
That was my number two.
That's pretty
good. There's fuck all left for Sam. I feel terrible. It's his show.
No, I don't care. It was literally the year. Have you been crying? That was my one. That's all I've got, right?
What's something you noticed that you don't think others might have immediately noticed about this film?
Long-time listeners of this podcast podcast will know that we have a question of what On The Nose song have you dropped into this film. And we, and quite interestingly, AC/DC has been outlawed on this podcast because AC/DC songs typically can fit every fucking movie there is, and you don't want us to hear us talk about AC/DC songs. However, early on in this film, he is listening to an AC/DC song when he's getting ready for his job at the Mexican restaurant, and he's wearing a singlet, or Americans call it tank top, or whatever you want to call it.
We call it a wife beater here.
Wife beater.
Wife beater, yes.
Because Americans are horrendously inappropriate.
Yeah. Americans want tanks. These guys want to beat their wife, and we just think singlets because we're just single people. However, the brand on his singlet is TNT, which is also an AC/DC song.
Yeah.
Correct.
Nice.
That was my thing.
All right. Mine was, I was actually surprised by how, for the most part, how accurate a lot of the filmmaking elements are within the film. Like when you see them, you know, making the film, there was actually...
It's almost like they had a fucking people making
you're
the movie.
Such a nerd.
No, but no, well, you're absolutely right, Sam, but these are the people who usually don't... When you see filmmaking, it's usually not represented so accurately, whereas this is such a love letter to film and to stuntmen. Yeah,
part
exactly.
of the industry.
I was actually really, really surprised and really delighted by how accurate, not all, that there's definitely some scenes in the back half, particularly when the action takes over, that it's like, well, no, that's not how it goes.
Yeah,
but for the most part, I was really surprised. It was actually really cool to watch. It was a really well-constructed film from that angle, I thought.
Okay, nerd, what have you got, Dave?
It's going to seem really obvious, but... I did see half the cinema walk out before this happened, so I'm assuming a number of people missed it. But having Lee Majors and Heather Thomas cameo in one of the mid-credits scenes, I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that
was
pretty sweet.
As the cops who weirdly have American accents and turn up being very American as Australian cops, but that wasn't the point. The point was a little nod to the people old enough like ourselves to have seen the original TV show, and I enjoyed it.
That was pretty good, yeah. Question number 7, what was the biggest load of bullshit in this movie?
All right, you know, I did just talk about how accurate I thought most of the filmmaking stuff was. The biggest load of BS, though, is Emily Blunt's arc from cameraman to director. That shit doesn't happen.
Wow!
It just doesn't happen.
Hey, there's 12 months that take place off camera that we don't see. There's been a year, man.
Man, people work in this industry their entire lives and don't move from a junior camera operator to a senior
You're
camera
saying
operator,
that
yet
she
alone
can't go
to director.
From a second unit cam op to helming the equivalent of Battlefield Earth in 12 months.
Like,
yeah, come
man,
on, bro.
Come on, man. No, here's my problem. As someone who works in film, when something is that
no one's giving me these jobs.
Well, yeah. When something is that inaccurate, it bothers me. You know, like there are some amazing films that have been like, all right, Slumber Party Massacre. She was an editor at first, and she had to fight to direct that film under Roger Corman. Like, all I'm saying is that like shit like this just doesn't happen, and it bothered me.
Wow. Listeners, Billy was a second unit cam op in a previous life and is still bitter.
Still bitter. Why don't they give me in-game? Fuckers.
Look, I'm just going to say the plot.
Oh, what a cheat.
The plot of this movie. I'll draw a distinction. I don't mean the screenplay. I think the writing... It's not fantastic, but I think it's fine. It has some good jokes. It has some good dialogue. The overall plot of this is the most generic, forgettable bullshit from 30 years ago. And no one can tell me it's deliberate to try and harken back to those days. It felt like an episode of the TV show. It was distressingly predictable and bad.
The one thing that pissed me off the most was when he discovers this video of this guy, you know, the guy he's supposed to find, killing this other guy. And rather than immediately send it to everyone he knows, send it anywhere. Like he tries to ring her and have a conversation with her. Following that, Winston Duke then escapes from this room, but they manage to get him, and then they don't kill him instantaneously. And then Winston Duke, this is what kind of pissed me off as well, goes back to the film set. And they show up there and they're still filming a movie like nothing happened. If I was Mr. Duke, I wouldn't be going anywhere near the fucking film set. I wouldn't be going anywhere near.
That's M'Baku?
Yeah. I wouldn't be going anywhere near a place
where he knows they're all looking for him.
Exactly.
Either you take the... Well, it's a film set. I'm doing my job. They legally don't have any reason to attack. I'm fine to show up at work. Or you're in fucking hiding. You're not in hiding for a bit and then just turn up to work the next day knowing that they're fucking there.
Yeah, exactly. There was some of that sort of shit that really got to me. That was probably the biggest load of bullshit. That being said, the other biggest load of bullshit was that at one point, his assistant gets kidnapped by these guys in a rubbish truck, and he goes chasing after the rubbish truck, and when he gets to the rubbish truck, one of the bad guys is hiding in the dump, like the dumper on the back of the truck. What the fuck is he doing there?
As if you wouldn't have a guard in the dumper just in case.
That sounds like an awful euphemism. You don't go anywhere without a guard in the dumper, Dave.
Reinforced iron is obviously the logical point that people would attack.
I guard my dumper quite a lot. That is a good point.
Always got a guard in the dumper. Gotta protect your dumper.
You definitely chuck one dude up my dumper to guard it. No one can get in if there's already one guy in my dumper.
Question number 8. Which character has ended up in hospital for sex-related injuries?
We all have the same answer, don't we?
Do we? Waddingham?
Aaron Taylor Johnson. Yeah. 100%. That guy's got a broken cock at some point.
Yeah.
Everything we see of him, and admittedly, this is half the cameo he had in Bullet Train. It's like he just likes David Leitch and will turn up for anything because he's hardly in this thing. But 24/7, he's doing nothing but snorting coke and banging hookers. He's broken something.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was between him and Billy's other answer, which is Hannah Waddingham, right? Like, she is living her life so fucking dangerously that she has got into some mishaps that she probably shouldn't have.
That was my answer, but I guess just to be different, then I'll say Stephanie Sue, who's his assistant. Because,
well, we know she's got a tattooed vagina, so she's obviously very, very game for.
I was disappointed by how little she was in this movie. I'm very strangely attracted to Stephanie to Sue. I don't know why. Weird, I find her oddly arousing.
I don't back you up on much. I'll back you up on this. She's weirdly hot.
Yeah, and I kept waiting for her to pop up, and then she's not in it much. But I'll say her.
You know what else is weirdly hot? Is Ryan Gosling when he's in the alien suit and he's talking funny.
Yeah.
Sam?
Raging. Watching Emily Blunt kick the shit out of him when he's just like that. Woof.
Oh, I get the best question.
You do.
How would you have incorporated Nicolas Cage into this movie?
I struggled with this, which is going to sound like a fucking spacey answer. Yeah, because I wanted something.
I answered this one in 2 seconds.
Yeah, same.
I found
this
something
crazy.
Amazing for him, but the only thing I could come up with is Metal Storm needed a like huge villain. You know what I mean? Like the Emperor in June, basically, and that's what we needed. We needed to see.
I already cast that. That's John Travolta.
Yeah, right.
In
I know.
Battlefield Earth dreads.
Yeah, Battlefield Earth. It looks so much like Battlefield Earth. But I would have had him in that. I would have had him and Momoa just like duking it out, and you know, tossing each other around and guarding a dumper.
That works for me.
Oh, my answer came.
Where am
recently.
I?
Fuck Aaron Taylor Johnson. That role should have been Cage. Man.
Oh.
Dude, Cage as the lead actor would have been sick.
Yeah, but Gosling doubling for Cage? Yeah.
It could work. Cage is timeless.
Yeah. Cage is a chameleon.
See, now I'm seeing Gosling in a remake of Face Off as the Travolta character.
Yes, please.
Where I had him was as Leopard Head drug dealer in full Gary Oldman Drexel mode, hamming it up to the 11th level.
Yeah.
Rygos comes in and there's Cage just chewing the scenery.
He was my other option. I did consider that one, yeah, for sure. Question number 10, which we apply to every action movie. Realistically, at what point should have the main character died?
I'm going to say something probably kind of weird here. Roll credits, post-credit scene, 1 year later, another accident on set. He's dead.
No, fuck, you're a dark cunt. Jesus Christ.
I've got the exact same thing. First stunt back.
Really?
You know what I mean?
I reckon that would have been sick.
Oh my God, you two are awful, awful people.
Well, we don't know how well he's healed. And he's doing a fucking car roll.
Yeah.
And then he gets shot into the side of some wall about seven times.
So he goes through this whole film, has the happy ending, gets Emily Blunt, which, let's face it, is a really fucking happy ending. And you're saying 12 months later is fucking dead.
Oh, no. I'm saying right at the start of the movie. I'm saying after this fall.
You're saying the car roll, like, his first stunt in Sydney, yeah.
Oh, I'm with Sam. Yeah. He dies before the credits.
I'm saying what you say, Dave. I'm saying he goes through the whole thing.
Really? He gets his happy ending scene. And then he fucking dies.
Yeah,
you're awful. Sam and I are realistic. You're terrible.
Man, I thought I was hungover and grumpy, but this guy is just...
Yeah, you're terrible, Muriel.
Who shed in your Weet-Bix this morning?
It would bring a whole other layer to it, guys. Just imagine that. Because this is the really funny thing about doing it that way. Half the audience would miss it because so many people don't stick around for post-credits scenes. So you'd have, like, you know, people reviewing it being like, man, that ending is bleak. And people would be like, what are you talking about?
Did you see Fall Guy? Really enjoyed it. So much fun. And someone else going, oh, my God. God, yeah, what a wrenching emotional roller coaster. Yeah,
exactly. To somebody going, oh man, I hope they make a sequel. I was like, wouldn't it be weird without Ryan Gosling in it? Why won't he be
in
it?
I'm picturing like a full 10-minute long mid-credit scene of Emily Blunt at his side in the hospital, like holding his hand and weeping. Like, I think that'd work so well.
Why wouldn't he be in it? What do you mean, why wouldn't he be in it? He died.
I love the fact, Billy, I love the fact you've not only put that in there, you've drawn it out to a 10-minute post-credit scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where he goes through like chemotherapy and shit. Yes,
that's so what I'm picturing.
You're literally coming up with a new movie, Billy, and it's more depressing than the way we described the start of this one.
Yeah. Fall Guy 2, Terms of Endearment.
Anyway, that must be over to my personal questions.
That was a journey.
Yeah, let's move on before we all start fucking interview or put on watch or something. I feel sorry for your wife, Billy. More ways than one, but hey, let's move over to my questions. First question, let's set aside Fury Road. Is this the best Australian set movie of the past 10 years?
No.
Yeah, I know you were going to say that.
That's an easy answer.
We've had two Wormwood movies alone that beat it.
Well, according to IMDb...
No, I'm talking about major blockbusters, right? Because aside from Fury Road, I can't really think of too many other massive blockbusters that have been set in Aussie.
Yeah, well, according to IMDb, Lion is above Fury Road, but I would actually go The Nightingale, which is a fucking 100%. Exceptional movie made by Jennifer Kent.
Yeah. Yep.
It's probably a little bit too on the indie side. If you go on blockbusters, though, yeah, this would probably be it. I mean, this is better than Anyone But You, which was also set in Sydney and came out this year. This is absolutely better than Anyone But You.
I preferred Anyone But You to this.
You're cooked in the head, mate.
Nah. Give me Glenn Powell's junk over this movie any day.
I found it weird because, like, I was thinking to myself, it felt like there was a long spate there where there was a lot of movies set in Australia, a lot of blockbusters. And then maybe I'm getting that confused with the fact that a lot of blockbusters were actually filmed there. So you had like The Matrixes and all that sort of shit.
Yeah.
Like in the early 2000s.
It's only the first Matrix where you're going, they're just fucking walking down Martin Place.
Yeah.
That's
still happening though. It was really surprising actually when I Googled, you know, Australian movies from 2014 onwards so that I could, you know, come here with an educated answer because I'm a legit podcaster. the Google search result was fucked for me because it was littered with so many films that were just filmed here and not actually set here
because you can't draw that distinction. It's either it's very subjective.
Yeah
it's kind of like if we said that Endgame is a New Zealand film because Thanos's design was created at Weta Studios, which is set in Wellington.
But yeah, 100% The Nightingale is 1,000%.
That's my answer.
Nightingale is a very good movie. That's a good answer. Moving on, we have mentioned around how stunts definitely deserve an Oscar. I mean, it's kind of bizarre that stunts have been an integral part of filmmaking for decades, yet, you know, special effects and stuff like that have all got their own Oscars. Why don't stunts? And I did love it in the movie how they brought it up and they sort of, what they say to Ryan Gosling, like, isn't there an Oscar for stunts? And he just doesn't say a thing. It's like the silence is almost deafening. Like, or he just says no or something like that. Like, it's so...
Oh, this entire movie is basically that one line.
I mean, I believe they have been talking about it finally coming in from next year, right?
Well, they've been talking about it for years. Yeah. It feels like decades now that
they're
like,
not everyone but the fucking tea lady gets an award? Why not the guys that risk their fucking lives?
Exactly.
Yeah.
anyway. So we can all agree that stunts need an Oscar. What movie trope or moving or movie making aspect 100% does not need an Oscar?
This was the easiest question for me.
Who's first? Am I first?
No, yeah. I'm going first.
Best song. Billy's going to have the same answer. I want to be first.
Best song. Best song should be a Grammy. That's a Grammy. There's already a Grammy for best soundtrack. Best song should be a Grammy as well. Because here's what annoys me.
Different things. The soundtrack contributes to the film.
Yeah.
The song is nothing to do with the film.
Yeah, best song should be a Grammy, not an Oscar. Because here's what annoys me. It opens at the only people at the moment who realistically can win an EGOT are people who win for best song and then are in a Broadway musical or something. That, to me... That's not the point of the EGOT. The EGOT should be about a triple threat. Like, if Taylor Swift wins an Oscar for best song, that shouldn't count. She should need to win an Oscar for best actress to count for an EGOT. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, unless you're Mandy Patinkin and you're going for acting and singing.
Yeah, best song can
But there's
off.
Only one Mandy Patinkin, so it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Yes, 100% song has no place being in there and never has.
I saw a tweet recently or something, or like a meme or whatever, where it was just like, Akira Kurosawa, Alfred Hitchcock, mm-hmm. Peter O'Toole,
yep.
combined Oscar wins, less than Billie Eilish.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and true. I like Billie Eilish, and that's still incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking crazy.
It's, fucking horrendous.
There's a few others on there as well, but I'm just paraphrasing. Yeah, that for me is just insane. The final question of mine is, what are you guys' box office predictions for Middle Storm?
This was a really hard question to think about. I'm going to say, with Aaron Taylor-Johnson in the lead, 20 mil. With Momoa, 45. That's my final prediction.
Are you talking total gross or opening weekend?
Total gross. Total gross.
Oh, you want a dollar figure? I thought you just meant good, bad, medium, whatever. Alrighty. Depends on what's the budget of Middle Storm?
Well, it doesn't
like
matter.
100 to
200. 100, so call it 150 budget. I'm saying it makes back 110.
I reckon
that's too high. Because
it feels like Battlefield Earth, but I'll be generous and say it's like Valerian or maybe Jupiter Rising, both of which I actually fucking like. But here's the thing. Horrendous piece of shit.
And we already have
Cowboys versus Aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. But here's the
we
thing,
already
Dave.
Have the fucking movie.
When Valerian came out, people were still going to the movies. Here's the problem. People aren't anymore. I mean, we were gonna do Boy Kills World on the show next week. So far,
I'm saying this thing's a failure.
That's been out over a week. It's made 2 million worldwide. Like,
yeah. I'm saying this film will be a failure because it looks like shit. And it would have cost a lot.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've got to say, our last two episodes were, what was it? Civil War, and then the one before it was the remake of Roadhouse. Those episodes are shit. Like, download numbers. Like, they are abysmal.
No one cares.
Forrest Gump, you know, like, quadrupled on the opening day what those two combined have.
Because
like,
Civil War only appeals to cinephiles who like Alex Garland. Other than that, people think it's boring. And Roadhouse is an utter piece of shit.
Thanks, Munchie. So I mean, even for this, I don't really have high expectations. But I mean, fuck it, I'm not doing this for listenership. I'm doing this to have a yarn with you guys and put something out that I'm proud of. So
we're doing it because we like doing.
None of us are doing this for listenership, Sam.
Fuck no. It's funny because we've got our friend Julio at the end. His question of like, what's your most controversial opinion? And my controversial opinion was that I thought Metal Storm looks like it's going to be fucking terrible, and that's the end of Emily Blunt's career. And I don't. You know what I mean?
That's part of the post-credits scene, Sam. Yeah. While she's consoling him at the hospital when he's dying, she gets a phone call from her agent saying that it tanked and she's done.
Her agent's leaving her.
I want to see this dark Swedish fucking film that Billy's got in mind. It's all in black and white. Yeah. Max von Sydow's just on the sideline crying the whole film.
Sony's contacted her. They need another film. Sony's contacted her. They need another tax write-off. Does she want to direct Madam Web 2?
Yeah. That'd go to Elizabeth Banks, surely.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, there goes my controversial opinion early, but hey, fuck it, we're done. Let's move over to Billy.
My personal questions. My first one for you guys is, what is the best movie within a movie?
I actually thought more about this than any other question.
There's and so many to choose from.
I chopped and changed a lot, but I've settled on, and I think it's called, Satan's Alley, I think, which is a film starring Tobey Maguire.
Yes.
And Kirk Lazarus.
Yes, Kirk Lazarus.
As portrayed by Robert Downey Jr. Because not only did it win MTV's Best Kiss, it also scored the Crying Monkey Award at the Beijing Festival. And, I mean, it looks like a serious piece of cinema.
Yeah.
So I'm going with that.
Oh, man, you could have picked so many movies just from Tropic Thunder alone.
Just from Tropic Thunder, yeah. I know.
Simple Jack. You're not a Simple Jack fan.
Fatty's Part 2.
What about you, Sam?
I'm going to go, I mean, it came to me, it's quite infamous, obviously. It's a film within a film. It's probably one of the first films within a film that a lot of us of a certain age watched. It's Angels with Filthy Souls.
That's a good call. Yeah. I didn't even think
definitely,
of that.
Definitely in my short.
That's a great one. Mine was Chubby Rain from Bowfinger. I love that movie. All right.
I was very close to picking the, what was it called? The laughing, laughing something from Singing in the Rain.
Oh, that's
the one
a good
where
call.
They're fucking around with the sound and the microphones and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the first thing I thought of, and then I remembered Kirk Lazarus, and I thought that's a treasure trove of films to draw from there.
All right, my next question for you guys, because these are never going to stop. They've been going now for 30 years. What is the next 70s or 80s TV show that's going to have a film adaptation?
I wish you'd included 90s. Condor Man.
Condor Man.
The fuck?
Never heard of that.
Starring Michael Crawford from Some Mothers Do Have Him.
Sorry, can you repeat that? Did you say Condor Man or Condom Man?
Condor Man.
Oh, okay, not Condor Man. I was like, well, Condor Man sounds like a good action movie.
Condor Man. Condor Man.
Oh, Condor
there
Man.
There you go. There's the 70s, 80s premise that needs a reboot.
What the fuck is that? Is it a superhero?
It's a very cheesy superhero thing with, as you'd expect, starring Michael Crawford from some others. And, yeah, he's Condor Man, and he goes around doing Condor Man shit, solving crimes and battling evil and all that sort of crap.
All right. Good shit.
The other one, the first one I thought of, until I thought Condor Man needs some love, was Knight Rider.
Yeah, that was the first thing that came to mind for me as well.
Which, realistically, is probably the next one that's going to get a fucking new movie.
Yeah. I'm really surprised that we
haven't
had it. And
there'll be a Hasselhoff cameo.
Yeah. Like, that to me feels like the most famous of them all that hasn't been done.
Oh, we've had a Baywatch. Surely everyone's looked at that and gone, what else can we shoehorn Hasselhoff in a cameo into? Oh, wait on, he had another show.
Yep.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the one for me. And then I thought, if we're going cartoons, I'm surprised we haven't had a Thundercats movie yet.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be sick,
I just reckon everyone's too scared of the Sonic thing and not getting the look right.
Yeah, well, I think everyone saw Cats and then realized how much how much of an appreciation we have for people in cat suits.
Yep. Hashtag release the butthole cut.
Thundercats the butthole cut.
Thundercats the butthole cut. James Corden is like Lino or whatever. Thundercats! Ho!
Dame although I could do with a bit of Taylor Swift as Chitara.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd go see that.
T-Swift as Chitara, Judy Dench as Mumra or whatever the fucking villain is. let's do it. Let's make the word. I reckon
Idris Elba as Skeletor. Fucking let's cast this
Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing, though. I reckon there's legitimately some sort of fan cut out there where they've taken scenes out of Cats and turned that into fucking Thundercats. I'm positive that there's going to be something like
if
that.
If I had the skills, I would have already done it.
Oh, same. That'd be hilarious. Just like digitized on little suits and shit. Yep.
My last question for you guys. This I don't even know if you guys will have an answer for this. I was just curious because I like when you guys get to share some personal stories. What is the coolest stunt that either of you guys have attempted or that you think you could do?
This was the easiest one for me to answer by
my I
thought it would be easy for you, Sam.
It came to me instantly. sword fights with, when I was, up until I was 18, where we lived in Mossman, had a, all around the front of the house was a wall of bamboo.
Yeah, yeah.
So obviously I would cut that shit down and make swords because that's what you do. And mate and I were doing Conan the Barbarian and smacked our swords together super hard and they smashed and a giant shard of one went straight through my fucking leg. And I have the scar to this day.
Yeah.
Fuck this. Mine
is similar. I think, mine is also sword related. My my father-in-law, he, for some reason, I don't know, he's a bit of a wanker. So he had this samurai sword, you know, hanging on his wall. So me and my wife's little brother, who's a good 10 years younger than me, we used to play real life Fruit Ninja. So we would just pelt fruit at each other and try and like cut it in midair.
So you're an adult for this.
Yeah.
I was like,
this was a couple years ago.
This was on the weekend, wasn't it?
Brilliant.
Billy, never grow up. I've got two that I've tried in my life. I've got one, both of them I was drunk. One when I was about 16 or 17, I was playing a lot of rugby at high school and I was convinced that my body had become an impenetrable patrol fortress. We were at my place and I said to my friend, I'm so drunk I could fall down the stairs right now and I wouldn't even feel a thing. And my mate was just like, okay, do it. So I was like, fine. And so I rolled down four flights of stairs. And when I got to the bottom, I stood up and I was like, I don't fucking feel a fucking thing. And then we just went about our day and all this other shit. Woke up the next day and I honestly was like, I've died but I've left the lights on because every single part of my body is in agonizing pain. There was bruises from my ankles to my fucking forehead and I was like, just covered, like, what the fuck have I done? You'd think I would have learned, but 10 years later, I'm standing in a lounge in London on the purse, blasted out of my fucking head, and I was saying to one of my friends, I'm so drunk right now that someone could punch me in the face and I wouldn't fucking feel anything. And my friend, I said to her, my friend's soon-to-be wife, I said, oh, you could get up and punch me in the face. She goes, I'm not going to punch you in the face. One of my other female friends then said, I'll fucking punch you in the face, Sam. I did not know that she'd done kickboxing for many, many years, and I was like, yeah, okay, bring it on. Punch me in the face as hard as you can.
Boom!
She did. And my jaw moved about 3 inches to the left where it was supposed to be. And I said, I need to go to the bathroom. And then, no, I need to go to the kitchen. I went into the kitchen, grabbed a handful of ice and just started like, fucking agony. And then she came and she's like, see, I told you. And I was like, you think you're right? So, being convinced that I could take a punch, being convinced that I could roll downstairs drunk and... both were failures.
Alrighty, now my turn. What other dog movie would be improved with the inclusion of a crotch-biting command?
Oh, Clifford the Big Red Dog, surely it's...
Jesus!
Oh my God, that's a big crotch. Man.
No. Come on, I'm going to come up with a sane answer. Last year, me and the daughter went and saw the Paw Patrol Mighty Pups. If I can see Chase,
let's rescue these people.
Yeah. Mayor Humdinger just gets like six or seven dogs, however many were in there, just like chowing down on his fucking junk. That Humdinger needs it because he turns into a giant... like a 700-foot man, if we have seven super pups, just chomp them on the junk and drop them like a fucking sack of shit. I would have paid attention to the movie rather than doing what I did.
Watched it, which, I would have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would have enjoyed it rather than doing what I did, which is took my daughter to watch it. She sat there. I got my phone out and watched another movie while inside the movie theater. Headphones in. And I felt terrible. My daughter's having these like memories of a lifetime. She's like, look at Sky. I'm like, yeah, she's not paying any attention whatsoever.
I'm gonna go with Beethoven, which is probably just the easy answer. But
I thought Turner and Hooch was the easy answer. But
I feel like
Turner
both of those Hooch, movies probably have a crutch bite in them, though.
Yeah, probably.
Who do you want to see bitten more? That's the question. Tom Hanks or Charles Grodin?
Tom Hanks, actually. I fucking hate that guy. Yeah, Turner and Hooch, that's a good call. Yeah.
That's a huge call.
Yeah, he deserves a good crotch biting.
Yeah, that was my first answer until I thought about it more. And then I settled on 101 Dalmatians because I would pay good money. I love Emma Stone, but I would pay good money for 101 tiny puppies to be just...
That sounds kind of wrong, Dave.
You know, as I said it,
yeah.
I might cut that
it
out.
It sounded way more sexual than I intended it to.
You don't actually have
and
to answer
I didn't
your own
intend
questions,
it
Dave.
That way, but fucking, I'll own it. I'll own it. Emily, I apologize. What other 70s or 80s TV show could also have been seamlessly referenced in this film and how? Because we had a shitload of fucking references. What else could have been worked in?
See, Knight Rider was, again, the first thing that popped to mind. Was Knight Rider referenced in this at all?
No, I didn't see a Knight Rider reference.
We didn't have, like, a talking car at all or anything like that, really, did we? That could have...
No, yeah.
But
that
all
been
things would
call.
Be improved.
Yeah.
It would have been easy call. Just a sat-nav that was like, where do you want to go, Michael? Or something like that.
We even had big scenes. Like, he's choosing between he's got the two big SUVs that look the same, and he finally gets... He could have got into that, and it could have said...
Yeah.
Hello, Colt.
Yeah, yeah. Where would you like to go?
That could have worked.
Yeah. I'm going with Cheers. Instead of the karaoke bar, just make that a regular bar. Just have fucking Ted Danson behind it.
Yeah, hey, actually, I'm glad you brought this up because that was actually my biggest load of bullshit. Who the fuck is doing karaoke at like 3 in the afternoon?
Yeah, karaoke is a midnight to 3 a.m. activity.
Yeah.
Post 3 a.m.
Yeah.
In Chinatown, not in the middle of fucking Martin Place or wherever they were.
Yeah, broad daylight doing karaoke. And the other big load of bullshit, how do you do that?
And not only karaoke at like 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
Yeah.
But when he gets there in broad daylight, Emily Blunt's
already finished because it's too late.
Done, like, fucking did you? Was this a lunchtime?
Yeah. That was horseshit. Add to it that Hannah Waddingham is actually like a very talented singer. We should have got a song out of her. That kind of pissed me off.
That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole Emily Blunt was like, got there, had two shots. I'm going to sing a song. He hasn't turned up yet. How could he? I'm going to leave after 17 minutes and be very upset. That being said, Waddingham did get there and say he left without telling you. But
yeah.
My reference was, in addition to Lee Majors and Heather Thomas turning up as cops, I would have liked another four cops, and I would have liked the Golden Girls all in police uniforms to rock up at the end and
Dave,
give it some sass.
I thought we told you we were done hearing about your sexual fantasies, mate.
Don't judge me. Alrighty. Third question. Is Emily Blunt playing Is Emily Blunt playing a director making a movie where a human falls in love with an invading alien, a subtle critique of her husband's more nihilistic view of human alien relations? And where do you each sit on the fuck, marry, kill spectrum when it comes to an alien invasion?
Well, yeah,
because I like to leave things uncomfortable.
Oh, 100%. So yeah, I mean, I think it maybe is a subtle critique. Sure, why not? In terms of the fuck, marry, kill, yeah, I mean, I'll do anything to keep myself alive, so
yeah.
That's all I'm going to say. Either way, we're fine.
My only question about fuck, marry, kill is which order, Dave?
Yeah, exactly. 100%, right?
Yeah.
Am I going to be alive for two of those?
Yeah. You know, you meant to pick one. It's not all of them.
Oh yeah, that's easy then.
But variety's the spice of life, Dave. You know, everyone loves a smorgasbord.
Aliens invade, give you the options. What do you pick?
I mean, it really depends on what the aliens look like, right? You know, like.
Oh, yeah, I don't think you get to pick the scenario. You know, life presents the scenario. You just roll with it.
I mean,
it.
If it's those things from like a quiet place, I mean, it's 100% fuck, right? So it's like...
I mean, those things are built for fucking, man. You've seen their mouth holes.
That's one of these things, though. Like, if Gamora lands, of course I've got to marry her, but if Nebula lands, I'm going to marry her because then never have to have sex.
Let's get to the last question,
it's
Sam.
Somewhere in the middle, it's like Signs. It's humanoid. You assume it's built appropriately, yeah. But not pretty.
And then if Thanos lands, then it's 100% kill. I could take him. Anyway, let's move us down to our final question, which is, of course, a Patreon question. Comes courtesy of our mate Julio of the Contrarians podcast. An awesome podcast which rages against the Rotten Tomatoes machines, takes a movie that's universally beloved, and argues why it's shit before giving the real talk at the end, or vice versa. His question, which I mentioned before, what's your most controversial opinion? You guys have already heard mine, but let's hear from these two.
All right. Well, I'm going to piss Dave off here once again, as I tend to do. I don't know how controversial this is. I guess I'll find out from your guys' reactions. This is more fun than Dune 2. This is better than Dune 2. Dune 2 has now dropped to probably, it might not even be top 5 anymore for me this year. So, yeah, there you go. I liked this movie. It was a bag of fun.
Punch yourself in the dick hole.
Oh my God.
Mate, totally valid opinion. I bet that Julio will agree with me. I know Nick Haskins will.
Julio thinks the Psycho remake is better than the original. Yeah. I don't think we can take his account on anything seriously.
That's trolling.
Oh my God. What can I say that's controversial about this fucker? There wasn't nearly enough Teresa Palmer in it.
Yeah, she was pretty good. Billy's looking her up.
I'm like, who the fuck is Teresa Palmer? I was waiting for... I actually haven't started Googling yet, but I will now. I was waiting for one of you guys to like say something more about who she is.
She's an Australian star. Actress. She's the girlfriend.
Who began her roles in bed. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I almost had to Google who she was in this because I knew she was like fourth build or something.
She was kind of funny. Yeah, I could have done with more of her. Yeah.
She is a very attractive woman. And I couldn't even see her in this. So, yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of opinions about this movie, but I can't think of any of them that are controversial. The script is shit. The action's good. It's all fairly predictable stuff.
Yeah, there's not so much controversy you can really say about this film. I think we've already done most of our controversial opinions about it. Yeah. Anyway, that does take us down to the end. Thank you everybody for listening and tuning in. You guys, why don't you tell us all about the network that our podcast is now on, your own podcast, all that sort of stuff.
Thank you for having us here, and now I can cut out all of my bullshit, which is gonna be great. Dave and I, we've just launched the Potty Mouth Radio Network. It's been going for about 3 months. We've got several shows. You can hear Dave and I on We Watched a Thing, which is our OG show, the movie show where we talk movies, or yep. The Hunt for the Perfect Album, where we take turns giving each other albums. In fact, this week we had Liz from Movie Reviews and 20 Qs over there. She was counting down lists of top 10 songs with names in the titles, which was actually pretty fun. And also launching this week, in fact, the same day that this episode comes out, is our D&D pod.
Nice.
Which Time to Liz die. Is on, playing Umlaut the Orc. It's a lot of fun. So you can find all that at pottymouthradio.com.
Yeah, good stuff.
That's the first time you haven't felt the need to do the tried and true additional fucking lines of dialogue that are irrelevant about Facebook and everything else.
Well, we're on someone else's pod, mate.
True. Anyway, yeah, thanks again, everyone, for listening. Hey, if you want to get a hold of us, you can find us on email at nmritqs@gmail.com or Facebook or Instagram at Movie Reviews and 20 Qs. Upcoming episodes, yeah, I really want to do the Rays. I think Furious is probably going to get done at some point, and we've got plans for a couple of other films, but all will be revealed soon. Anyway, that's thanks from me.
Thanks from me.
And me.